Okay.
I'm not sure if what the reason is, but I have a time for every occasion. And I put the time today, I thought people in Midsommar would notice or whatever. People don't notice my ties anymore. The old days they used to notice. I put it on because of tonight's topic, which we'll get to in a moment. First of all, I'd like to just remind everybody, next week we will not have a class. And the week after, we will not have a class either because I can't, something came up, I can't make it and stop it at night. Okay, I have to be in Yerushalayim. So, next 2 weeks we'll have class. Before we start, I want to ask you, according to what you wrote originally back then, you wrote about, I had scheduled down to do two classes about the ultimate question in Judaism, why bad things happen to good people, and one was about Olam Haba, life after this life. But I want to ask you, would you prefer these topics, or would you prefer more man-to-man topics, because I can change them. This is the people who are still here. So my question is, for example, I had a topic where, when is it permitted to lie in Judaism? Okay? So I'm asking, do you want the more philosophical topics, or do you rather have the more man-to-man? Yes.
I would like to
just make it quick, because we want to get to the topic.
Yes, if we're here for Pesach Sheni, I would love to have continuation of the Haggadah, so we'll have the second part for next year.
Okay, I heard that. If everybody agrees, I'll do that. Anybody? No, you let me pick the topics.
Yes.
Okay. Because I did about the one about proof of God, the arguments of God's existence. Everybody seems to like it, so maybe we'll do the heavy stuff. Okay. All right. This week's topic I chose Doctor Now because next Tuesday night, if I'm not mistaken, it is the Yom HaTzmaut, 75th anniversary of the creation of the State of Israel. And it would be very easy for me to frame this topic in a, like we did when we talked about the very first topic, nation versus Judaism as a nation versus a religion, and to say, you know, the Zionists believe in the land of Israel, while the anti-Zionists believe not in the land, they believe in the religion. And I could easily frame it that way, but it would not be accurate how Judaism looks at the land. I could also frame it. I'm going to turn this off. Okay. I could also frame it in terms of many other, I would say, false differences between people. People put the land first. The Chalutzim, for example. Because they were socialists, they believed very much in working the land. And they would celebrate, for example, Shavuot coming up as a tremendous agricultural pagan, it's almost pagan, because they would take all the mitzvot that they took in the Torah, but that would be the car and everything, the main thing they would do. But they were very angry at the Polish middle class that came in the 20s, who wanted to open up shops and didn't want to work the land. So, and nothing to do with religion, because they believe that socialists, you have to work the land, it's all about the land. So I'm not going to frame anything in terms of Zionism is the belief in the land. What we're going to do is very simple. First of all, it's very hard to get this on one page, because there are literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of sources on the Jewish view of the importance or the specialness or why the land in Israel is the land of Israel. But we're going to talk about, not from the perspective of the people who do not necessarily believe that the land is so important, and we're going to show from their perspective they also are mistaken. What do I mean by that? It's very hard to say, or rather hard to say, the fact, most of the Jewish history, Jews were not in the land of Israel. There have always been a few Jews here, but the majority of Jewish communities and the real strong Jewish communities, most of Jewish history, have been outside the land of Israel. So you might argue, and they got along fine, and they flourished, and therefore, we don't need the land, not that important. You might also say that if you look very closely in the Torah, almost the entire book of Deuteronomy Dvarim is about mitzvot that we will do in the land of Israel. An army and all kinds of things, agricultural mitzvot, etc., etc. But what happened after the Churban Bayit Sheni, after the second destruction of the second temple, Jews went to the diaspora, their focus shifted, and therefore, for most people who are, at that time everybody was religious, if you weren't religious, what we call religious observant, you weren't part of the Jewish community, there was nobody who was not observant to, you know, stay in the Jewish community, I'm talking about 2,000 years ago, 1,500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, etc., etc. I'm talking about before the 1700s. And for these people, we got to discuss how important it was, the land, for them. We could say, look, the shift focus, there was no longer a Beit HaMikdash, so therefore the land is not that important. But what I'd like to show you tonight is for us, and we made the very big leap. Israelis who've never been to Chutz La'aretz don't understand how difficult it is to make Aliyah. Big deal, you come Aliyah, they've been in Israel their whole lives. It's a very big deal to change your culture, change your birthplace, friends, all kinds of things, and to come to a country that doesn't necessarily share the same values and all kinds of, and it's a very, so you, we're all gonna pat ourselves on the back, but now let's go forward, okay? And try to understand what is Yom HaTzma'ut, specifically the land of Israel, for a Jew who believes in the Torah. And can you be a believing Jew and not believe in the importance of the land? After all, most of the rabbis in the last 2,000 years, certainly until 200 years ago, never were in the land of Israel. And certainly their land didn't seem to be prominent, but we're going to see otherwise. So we're going to, like I said,
I had to pick, I try to shorten the sources to get it on one page.
There's plenty enough, there's enough. Should be enough for everybody. So again, what I want to do is I want to examine how people who live a, quote, Torah life, who don't believe, quote, who are not necessarily Zionists, what is their attitude, or what is the Torah attitude to people who, again, stereotype for reasons of simplicity, somebody who lives in Borough Park or in Muncie, who has no intention of coming on Aliyah, who has no real connection to the land, how do they perceive the land in normative Jewish view? And I purposely took out normative Jewish view. So, for example, we're going to start with an overall Jewish view of how a Jew looks at the world. Source number one, Al Shlosha Dvarim Ha'olam Omed, there are three pillars on which the world, when I say that really means the Jewish world, stands, on Torah, and I'm not going to go into each one, and there are 1,000 perushim on each of these, but Torah will say Torah learning, okay? Avodah will be prayer, make it easy, and Gemilu Chasadim will be mitzvah between man and man, okay? Within these three categories, we're going to see how the land of Israel is perceived, okay? The second source is something that just is very quick. You know, it says the Talmud Torah can get kulam, and you'll see rabbis will say the most important thing is to learn Torah, etc., etc. But it says a number of times what it says in source number two. The Medrash says, "Mulamei she'ein Torah ke'darat Eretz Yisrael, v'ein chachma ke'chachmat Eretz Yisrael." A Jew cannot learn Torah as well as he or she does in the land of Israel, or learn anything that's not Torah. And for whatever reason, there's something mystical about this land, which we're going to see, that has certain characteristics. And one of them is, Torah is learned better than here than elsewhere. And if you think this is just a random statement, you all know what Birkat HaMazon is, okay? The grace after meals, which we say, and don't even think about the words, which is a different class, Torah of Tefillah. But look what it says here. Source number three is a Yerushalmi. It says the following: Amar lo hiskir Torah Eretz Yisrael Eretz Machzirin al Torah. If you say the bracha in the benching about the land, about Torah, and do not mention the land, you said an invalid bracha. What do you mean Torah and the land? What do we say about that in the benching? In Pirkei Hamazon, look at the third line of the source three, second line. What do we say? Nodelecha Hashem Elokeinu. We thank God for what? Al shimchasa la'avoteinu eretz chemdo Torah chava. Every time a observant Jew finishes a meal, right? We're going to see. He even finishes a cookie, right? And says, Alam Michya. We refer to the land of Israel. You can't escape it, okay? We thank God for the land. Every time, even though the food that we just ate may not or may have come from the land of Israel. The Yashot Seitanu Hashem Elokeinu Me'eretz Mitzrayim. Like you said about Pesach, this is what we learn about Pesach. Every time you bench, you talk about God taking us out of Egypt. Ufi Gadanim Beit Avadim, and taking us out of bondage. The Avrit Chashach Atanta V'Sarenu, and the Brit Milah, which is this week's Parsha. The Yal Torah Tchashalim Anatanu, and the Torah that you taught us, God. And therefore, the Rishonim is saying, if you forget in the Bracha of Nodelecha Hashem Elokeinu, the words, Al Shem Chavu Avoteinu Eretz Chemal Torah Chava, then the whole bracha is invalidated because you can't talk about learning Torah without mentioning Israel. Okay? Now, most, I would say, I don't know, most rabbis, I don't know, but most people who sit and learn Torah all day do not know these two sources. I guarantee, even if they're sitting and learning in the middle of Yerushalayim, they don't. They say that Torah learned in Israel is an expression avira de chakima. There is something in the atmosphere that makes the Torah better, but not necessarily just from someone. Okay. Not only that, look what it says. Source number four. That's why I'm bringing three sources and not just one, because it's again and again. Kivan shegalu Yisrael in koman ein lecha bitul Torah gadol mizeh. The greatest wasting time of learning Torah, Bitul Torah, is time you could have learned Torah and you didn't. You know, the Vilna Gaon used to have a notebook, and every Yom Kippur he would take it out, and how many minutes during the year he could have learned Torah that he didn't. He would write down those minutes, and that's how he would do tshuva. He said the greatest Bitul Torah is leaving the land of Israel. There's something about the land of Israel that makes your Torah better, and I would imagine, without betting, being a betting man, that a similar group of people, such as yourselves, who are sitting someplace in America with the same level of observance and synagogue attendance, I guarantee you that they don't come to a weekly shiur like you guys do. Okay? Something about Israel. All right, so the first thing is Torah is learned better. I might be right, maybe wrong, I don't know. I haven't been there in a long time.
So then how is it that all these young couples, they get married, they come here for a year, and then they go back?
Okay. First of all, I've said this many times, six words. Judaism is perfect, Jews are not. Don't judge. Because the Torah said, this is the Torah, you know, Israel is an opportunity to learn Torah. There are people who don't learn. There are many reasons why people go back. There are many people going Aliyah who go back. There are many people who come for a year because they go back because their parents said, you better come back or else I'll kill you.
Or I'll cut off the banya.
All right, or etc. There are people who go back. I had a cousin who just passed away, but he came here and he's here a couple of years and he wanted to get married. He couldn't get married because his parents couldn't afford to pay whatever it was at the time, $500,000, to buy half an apartment. Right, so he went back to America, got married, and then moved here.
Wow.
All right, but the point that I'm saying has 12 kids and et cetera, et cetera. My point is that there are many, many reasons people go back.
Why does more thing encourage them to stay?
Till 67, people didn't come here every year to learn Torah. Look at the other way.
Oh, yeah, but that was a whole different
time. Okay, since 75, 72, et cetera. Okay. Now let's go to the part which I think you're a little more familiar with. We'll go through it quickly. So I want to get to maybe some of the other issues. The idea that the land of Israel is much more central to a Jew than the land of Ireland is to an Irish American, or the land of Ukraine is to all the Ukrainians who are leaving, even though they feel very, people feel very, very strongly about their country. For the Jew, it's different. Okay, and I'll prove it to you. Well, I can prove it to you for many ways, but one of the ways is I have memories for you. Rabbi Wein just wrote a fantastic article. It's going to come out, I think, in Jewish Action, I'm not sure where, about how America reacted to the founding of the State of Israel. And one of the things he remembers as a 12-year-old kid, he says, 12 or 15-year-old, he says, they went to Friday, the state was declared, and Sunday there was a, they rented out the stadium that held 20,000 people. And he says, the first thing, first of all, he says, there were 20,000 people inside and a lot more than 20,000 people outside who couldn't get in. And then he says, they played Atikva, and everybody started crying. Mm. He says, in the last 2,000 years of the pain, everything, the Holocaust, just in a couple of years, the fact that the State of Israel, and he says, all the speeches were not, should I say, not necessary. Should have just gone home right ahead. But the point is, he talked about then, but that's the time that everybody felt close to Israel. But what about today? If you were a Jew, any kind of Jew, in the last 2,000 years, you can't exist without having the land as front and center. Okay? We don't always remember it. But look what it says, and have it, why do we say, we know this. Five, right? Koresh Omer, Koresh says in Ezra, Elo Elohim Hashem Yushalayim, Amar Lahem Afal Pish Yushalayim. Even though the Yushalayim is destroyed, the land has specialness. Now, I don't want to differentiate now between Jerusalem, outskirts of Jerusalem, the land of Israel, they all have special holiness. There are certain laws, you can do certain things. Just the fact that I can go into a Korean grocery store in the middle of Manhattan and have less problems with any kind of kashrus than I do going into any supermarket here buying the same apple. Okay, you have to make sure that I have truma and meiser and it's not tevel and it's not this, not the fourth year. There are all kinds of halachot. There I go in, I can care less, but going in, I can buy an apple and not have to worry. All right? So that's in terms of halacha, but in terms of spiritual feeling, look what it says. Okay? I'm already the same source five. I'm Rav Atar La'olam Eina Shchun Tchina Zaza Mikotel Maravi. This is one of the later Midrashim that says that the Kotel Maravi has the presence of God, whatever that means. And we know what the Kotel has emotionally for Jews that didn't last the 2,000 years. But it's not only that. If the Kotel has specialness, what about Jews who never came to the Kotel? So I didn't even put it in this book. Every time a Jew gets up to daven and wants to daven properly, the first thing he asks is,
where's Mizrach?
Right? So where's Mizrach?
Where's
your parents, your great-grandparents or whatever came from Eastern Europe? I have a shiur where what happens if the Aron Kodesh is this direction and Jerusalem is this direction, what are you supposed to do? But the point is, you say Mizrach because that's where it was,
where's
Mizrach. But if you're in Australia, even if you're in Kiryat Shmona, you're down the south. Anyway, the point is, you ask where to daven. The fact that you ask which direction to daven already says the land of Israel is important to me. Every time I turn to God, it's always through the land. I can't daven without knowing where the land is. So you're automatically conditioned that the land is important, okay? And if you need an emotional reason, not only 1948, I don't know how many of you remember 1967 or 73 or other times, Jews who had no affiliation with anything Jewish, who followed the news, when the war started, and I'm not talking about tears now, I'm talking about it affected them emotionally and in terms of action, mm-hmm. in ways that are not understood. logically. If I have no connection to Judaism, even though I know I'm Jewish, so they're fighting a war in Israel. I'm not sure that a third, fourth generation Italian is going to get upset if there's Italy is fighting somebody else. Or I am sure that unless they have relatives there now, someone who left Ukraine 50 years ago is not going to feel the pain that Jews felt during the Yom Kippur War, etc., etc. The question is why? And it is because the land itself that we're going to see is mystical and also something that we're very close to. And we see it in source number 7. Esek Yudushotain, there are 10 levels of holiness. Eretz Yisrael, Mekadesh HaMikol HaRatzot. Israel is holier. What does a holy land mean, you know, other than an expression, right? Doesn't mean a land of holes. What does it mean?
Separated,
holy, treated differently. We're going to see. It means all of those things, but it's not like, okay, we're going to see. And therefore, holiness is a place. Now, what makes it holy? You can't come without understanding what makes it holy. Why is it holy? God's Shekhinah is in, as a Kotel HaMaarovi. Why is God's Shekhinah in Kotel HaMaarovi and not in Kinar Si, Brooklyn? Why that's the Kotel? Jerusalem is a very unusual city in many ways. One of the things that makes it different is every other major city in the history of the world always was connected to some way, some... Some way of the economy. It was always either near a harbor, it was near a route that the merchants used to. Except Jerusalem. Jerusalem wasn't connected to anything. So what makes it so special? Okay, I'm glad you came. Okay, now. Yeah, but why? Why there? Now we're going to see something very interesting. Source number 8. The Rambam had a tradition of the following. Umesoret biyad hakol. Everybody had this tradition that nobody here knew when I asked why. Shamakom shebana David Shlomo hamizbeach. They read the place that David and Shlomo built the Mizbeach, Beit HaMikdash, Begar and Arvana, that they bought from this Arvana. Hu HaMakom, what is special about the place? So first he says, many events in Jewish history took place there, and we'll see why. Shebana bo Avram HaMizbeach, God told Avram, take your son and do Akad Alav Yitzchak. So he did Akedat Yitzchak. Why there? Hu HaMakom Shebana bo Noah, Kishiyatza Min HaTeva. It doesn't say where he went left, the Teva, but apparently it was near Jerusalem, and he brought Karbanot on Har HaBayit. Hu HaMizbeach Shegriv Alav Kayin. Kayin and Hevel both brought sacrifices to God, and that's why Kayin was getting angry at Hevel, because God accepted his sacrifice. From the very, very beginning, this was the place that sacrifices were brought. Right? The Egrim Adam HaRishon Karban. Why? Kishin Nivra. Umisham Nivra. Adam was created and the world was created from that place. What place? Okay? Amru HaChamim Adam Imakom Kaporato Nivra. Because that was the origin of the creation, therefore it became the place of bringing sacrifices. What was the origin of creation? You ever think about the Arabs? The Arabs took 95% of what they have. I just mentioned that we have I just did a chapter on differences between Islam and Judaism. I can find very few differences, but so many things are the same. What is the name of the place that they call in the temple, in English at least? I don't know if God's called in Hebrew. It's called what? The dome?
And
the rock. Which rock?
Evan Shtia
is traditionally the place from which, don't ask me to explain it scientifically, but that is where the world was created from. Okay? That rock that they have enclosed now. And that is the place of the Mizbeach. That is the place that of the Kerem Yitzchak and all the places, etc., etc. And That's why it's special. The creation of the world happened from there, and God's presence is there more than any other place in the world. Okay? And because of that, the land of Israel, which is, you know, debated exactly where it ends, where the borders are, etc., happened there. Source number 9, it says, Vayikava Matom Yaakov Gatsu, the place. What place? So Rashi says, well, this Kira Katube is a Matom, but it's the place is Har Moriah. Okay, and again, I don't have to prove to you, but that's why you were so holy. So we should know it's not just a place, and it's not just because my great-great-great-grandfather lived there in the year, 800 BCE, therefore it's important to me. For some people, that's enough. But for us, it's a religious concept. It's not just an idea of my ancestors are, okay. Now, not only that, these are wild statements. The next few statements we're going to see, or when I say wild statements, it's not the halacha, but you'll see how far Judaism went in saying that the land is so central to Jewish existence. Okay? So look at the first one, it says. It's source Tuvot Kufyud.
Which number?
10. La'olam yidor adam be'eretz Yisrael. A person should live only in the land of Israel. Afil be'ir sheruba obdei kochavim. Even in a city that has mostly idol worshippers. We don't hold that the Muslims are idol worshippers, but let's say Nazareth, mostly Christian today? I don't even know. But let's say they were Christians, and not even important. All right? It's better to live in Ramallah than to live in Munsi. That's what this Gemara says. The Ali Dor Mechutzlaris, don't live outside the land of Israel. The Afil Sha'ir Beruba Yisrael, and even where most of the people living there are Jewish, Crownites, right? Shekol Hadar Be'eretz Yisrael, because anybody who lives in the land of Israel, Domeh, and it's like somebody who has a God, because you're making a religious statement by living in Israel, right? And anybody who doesn't live in Israel, it's as if they don't have a God. Powerful statement, right?
And they don't have a what?
God.
Oh.
Okay. And the religious Zionists who try to defend the secularists found the state. So I just read this thing by Rabbi Wine about tears. This happens to me. Read it down. So his grandfather or father, visited the land of Israel. And he came back and he described them. He says, and they asked him, this was in the 20s, they said, do they have kippot on their heads? You know, they knew that they weren't religious. He says, when I saw the people, Jews, working the land, I was crying and I couldn't get a good glimpse if they had kippot or not.
Wow.
Right? That's what he answered. Nice. Anyway, the point is that according to this Gemara, better to live in a land and be not religious as long as you're living in the land of Israel. And it doesn't stop there. Okay, I'm going to skip 11 for now. It doesn't really end. Now watch. We say in the davening, I couldn't take my sitter. It says, I'll make sure to read it properly, especially with the pasuk. Okay, we say in the davening every single day in the Shema. In the second paragraph, we say the following. Okay, and you'll see the connection in a moment. Remember. Shema. Everybody in the Shema is one of the foundations of being an observant Jew. It says the following. It says the following. Yishamu lachem. You should keep all the mitzvot in the land of Israel. Hen yiftal lachem. But if you decide that you're not going to keep the mitzvot, and stay here. Visartem v'avanatem v'olim acharim. You worship other gods. You bow down to them. God gets angry and he will stop the rains from coming. Stopping the rains from coming is like what would happen if the Republicans got their way and they turned off the budget and there's no money coming, it would collapse the economy. Lo yeh matar, and there will not be any rain, or mo'ot en nivula, la'abad atem ne'eram me'alot atava, and you will quickly have to leave the land of Israel, who I gave you. V'samtem et barai eila alav avachem yal nashachem. These words, these, whatever these are, because it could be mitzvot, ukshatem otam liyada yachem, you should wear the tefillin, you should wear the tefillin on your arms, and you should teach your children to speak of them, of the mitzvot, etc., etc. I would end up by saying, in order that you should stay many, many years on the land, look what the Medrash says in source number 12. You have to leave the land. Even though you're leaving the land of Israel, I allow you to keep doing mitzvot. Allow me. Why? Kishatem kozrim lo yiyu lachem kodashim. They should not be new in your eyes.
You don't forget.
Right, you won't forget. Mashal omen ashakas al ishto, a man, it is similar to a king, and became very angry with the queen. The chazar beit avia, he sent her away to live in her half-father's house. Amar lahen havei mikushatim mitachshateich. The father said, you dress up like the queen when you're in my house. Ushitachziri lo yer lecha kalashim. It shouldn't be so strange when you come back and dress up as the queen. You should keep the mitzvot in chutz laretz. So they won't be this, okay? The word, and purposely they use the word tzionut, right? They said in tzionim, and it says, what's the part through pasuk? Hatzivi lach tzionim. Eile hamitzvot yisrael mitzionim lehem. Tzionim means, you know, what mitzion in school means. It means you specify, right? You're outstanding, if you will. But look at Rashi. He takes all that and puts it in one sentence. Tzanti et varai, he bases it on the words of the varai. Af la'achar she'tiklu, after you are going to be in chutz la'aretz, heyu mitzvyanin mitzvot. You're allowed to do the mitzvot. Hanichu tfilin, asu mitzvot, like the Shema said in the Shema, put on tefillin, do the mitzvah, only so you will remember what to do. He paraphrased the Rashi, the Gemara, correct? People who read this say, I don't really have to do mitzvah in Chutz La'aretz. Doesn't mean you have to do mitzvah there. You have to keep the mitzvah. But philosophically, you fulfill the Torah when you're living here. Okay? And that's what it means. And therefore, what it means, again, is that the land is the natural place for Jews. Even though for 2,000 years that wasn't the case, the Gemara, and the Gemara was written, by the way, the Gemara we're talking about, except for one source, was all written in
Babel.
Right? It was written in Chutz La'aretz. So it's not like, oh, they're only saying it because they wrote it there and they want to defend where they're living. They wrote it in Chutz La'aretz, and still, their attachment to the land was paramount. And obviously, I can bring so many sources to show you, but I'm going to show you some other things. Okay. I don't know if we all know, but Moshe Rabbeinu asks God to not to die, because he wanted to live longer. We all want to live longer. So what was so special? Why did Moshe want to live longer?
He wanted God's Eretz
Yisrael. Well, we'll see. Now, it doesn't say it quite like that, but it's quote, verse number 15. Darash Rav Shimoni, Neimah mitaveh Moshe Rabbeinu mitaneis l'Eretz Yisrael. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu want to live in the land of Israel? Why did he want to be a Zionist? Right? V'chile echol mipiryahu v'ayfu tzarich, o l'zboa mitubahu tzarich. He needs to have an extra food, he had plenty of money in the desert. Why does he need to go to Eretz Israel?
Yeah.
Right? He says, Ela kachom ha-Moshe, harbe mitzvot mitzvahu Yisrael. There are many mitzvot of the 613 that the Jews can only do in Israel. Eimer mitkayim ela be'eretz Yisrael. Hundreds of the mitzvot it comes down to. Ekaneis ani la'aretz kedei shechayim l'kulam. Moshe, don't worry about it. I ain't sweating the time. Moshe said, I want the opportunity. Okay.
You know, other people.
Moshe says, I want the opportunity to keep more mitzvot. Not important, the land, per se, the land, but it's an opportunity to live a full Jewish life. You don't live a full Jewish life unless you're living in the land of Israel. Now, remember, for all these people, we're not talking about where there was a Jewish state.
Right, but that's the sanctuary.
Someone will promise me next time we meet, we'll have air conditioning. Okay. All right. And now we're going to come to something which goes a little bit further. You know, Ben-Gurion was not a religious man, in the classic sense, or not certainly not an observant man. I won't say religious man. He certainly was not an observant man. And there's a story, because it's related to next week, this story about they came to the, oh, it's interesting, in the two stories about Yom HaTzmud, kind of worth repeating. One of them is in the Yeshiva of Panovich, came 1949, the year after they declared the state. They came Yom HaTzmud, and they asked the Rosh Yeshiva, no, they didn't ask the Yeshiva, the Rosh Yeshiva says, today, on the Hei Iyar, raise the flag of Israel on the top of the Yeshiva. And they went, you know, this is not exactly a Yeshiva that believed in the state, and didn't believe in the Guri, and didn't believe in any of this. So they went to the Rosh Yeshiva and they said, why? He says, so we're in Poland, we had to raise the flag of Poland on the Polish Independence Day. We shouldn't do anything less in the land of Israel. That's one interesting thing. They did for many, many years. I don't think they do it today. Second thing they asked is, but I'll go back to Ben-Gurion. They said, Rebbe, what should we do? You know, do we say Hallel or do we say Tachanun? Today he says, I passed in this area, I passed him like Ben-Gurion. I'll do what Ben-Gurion does. No. What does Ben-Gurion do?
He doesn't dominate.
Neither. Okay? He says, don't say Hallel. Tachanun and don't say Hallel. Anyway, so Ben-Gurion was an observant man. And yet he said, to live, you can't live in the land of that. I want to make it right, you can look it up in Google afterwards. He says, you can't believe in the land of Israel. Unless you believe in miracles in the land of Israel, you're not a realist. Okay? That's what he said. Anyway, but the point is, there's something miraculous about this land. Okay? Over and beyond everything we've talked about till now, maybe about the Torah. And I'll prove it to you. Okay? If you look at the Torah carefully, and why the Torah does this is another class. Yes.
You said Ben-Gurion wasn't a religious guy.
I didn't say that. I said, correct me, I wasn't observing that.
Oh, because he started at the Beit Knesset in Jerusalem.
He started many Beit Knesset, I'm sure. I mean, I don't know for sure, but I'm saying. So but he wasn't an observant man in the classic sense.
An artist.
Okay.
Wow.
Unlike Menachem Begin, who had a Torah education. Ben Begin, for 2 years, he hid from the British. He was the gabbai in a Haredi shul in Ramat Gan, and he had a long beard.
He was called Rabbi Sasso.
Whatever they call him a name, and he was able to hide out, and because nobody thought that Begin would be in, he wasn't a soul observant, but he knew the tradition, and that's how he hid out as a religious Jew. So, but Ben-Gurion wasn't, and also philosophically, the socialists were many of them were much more anti, religious than Ben-Gurion. All right, anyway, look at the Torah, and you would think for doing spiritual mitzvot, the reward of the Torah would be a spiritual reward. Keep the Torah, you'll go to the next world. If you keep the Torah, you'll get this in the... What does the Torah say? Again and again, what is the reward for keeping the mitzvot?
Rain.
We just read it. Okay. It'll rain. Now, you've got to understand, rain to most people in the world... Now, today it's changing. After going through a few years without a drought, drought in Cape Town and in Southern California. When it rains, then people will now stop to smile. But in Israel, people always stop and smile. I always used to say, what, can you tell the difference between the tourists and the locals? I said, when it rains, the locals smile, and when it rains, the tourists are unhappy, right? But if you look in the Torah, it says, rain. Why? What is rain?
Rain is very interesting.
I'll take an aside. We have a long time. As an aside, I'm going to write about that as a chapter. Rain is very interesting for two reasons. First of all, even though it's the year is 2023, and we can predict with almost micro perfection every phenomenon in nature, right? Certainly anyone that comes on a regular basis, I'm not talking about earthquakes, natural tsunamis, etc., but anything that comes on a regular basis, right, whether it be an eclipse or this, we can predict, we still can't predict accurately rain, right? There's still the weathermen that get up there and say, tomorrow, hey, in Israel, it won't rain tomorrow, right? Well, rain, and it doesn't rain, or it does, you know. Rain is something, even with all the computers, that is still eluded perfectionally, at least in the perfection idea. But you know it's going to come, there's a system. And so that makes rain very different than everything else, because it's not something that's guaranteed, no matter how this year is different than last year. Secondly, that makes rain different is, if we believe it, it's a reward, it's a very different kind of reward than most other rewards. Why? It doesn't, when it starts to rain, it doesn't rain, well, let's say, assuming we're all living not in apartments, but assuming we're living in agrarian society, right? It doesn't rain on your farm and not on your farm. Or it'll rain here and not rain there. It rains in the whole town, okay? Whether you deserve it or not. So therefore, as a community, we experience rain. Anyway, the Torah says, this is verse 16, verse 17, I'm not going to go through it. It says that the reward for keeping the Torah, keeping the mitzvot, is a very physical reward, is wealth. The translation of grain is wealth. Because if you have a lot of crops, it means you're going to have healthy animals, they'll have enough to eat, and you'll have animals, and you'll have crops, and everybody will be happy, etc., etc. Why that is a reward, and the land of Israel is prospering physically as a reward for mitzvot, is not what we're going to go into now. But I want to pull your attention to, so 16 we already did, 17 says the same thing, if you keep the mitzvot, and b'chukotai te'lechu, and then I will give gishmei and b'itam. By the way, if you don't have it b'itam, you get it at the wrong time, right? If you have it, then you can ruin the crops, right? Okay. Then it says something else, okay? In source 17, the third line says the following. Vatitma aretz. Okay, this is in Vayikra. If the land, the people do not behave properly in the land, that's the opposite of keeping the mitzvot, the kol avona, and I will address that iniquity of that, vataki haaretz et yodreha. And the land will vomit out its inhabitants. All right? So what does that suggest to you? What does that suggest to you? No, I mean, I don't mean that. Why would the land vomit you out?
It's like Yonah and the dove.
Okay, yeah. Land vomit, well, maybe the fish vomit them out. But what does it mean? Why?
You don't deserve it.
Correct. Meaning that you don't deserve the land. The land is almost like it has feelings. The land almost has a reaction, an emotional reaction to people who don't observe the mitzvot. Today the people don't observe the mitzvot. What happened? The land is throwing us out. I'm not going to get into the practical of that. So if you don't believe that, look at the next one. Eretz, God says, unlike all the other lands, Eretz Asher Hashem Elokecha Doresh Ota Tamid, God says, God is always involved. Doresh is a very strange verb, because usually Doresh is from the word Midrash, is learning, right? I am very involved with explaining or involved with the land all the time, day and night. Einei Hashem Elokecha, God's eyes are on it. Mereshit HaShanah L'Acharit Shanah, from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. Okay? There's a special relationship between God and the land of Israel. That makes it different. And that's why it's holy. And that's why, Meaning that how we behave on the land has consequences. Right? And therefore, God, that's what the Torah is telling us. And therefore, I am telling you, God says, you have a responsibility when you're going to get the land. Why are we so fortunate to have the land 200 years ago they didn't? I don't know. You know, everybody's going to go claim credit because we're learning more Torah, because we're doing this and because we're doing that. It's certainly because not because we have Jewish unity. So I don't know why we are so fortunate. Okay? Now I'm going to go one step further and show you how basic the land of Israel is to every observant Jew. What were the very first words that were said to the very first Jew by God?
Lecha.
Lecha, which means what?
Go.
Haman Aliyah. Source number 18. Vayomer Hashem al Abraham. There's no introduction. We know that Abraham originally came from Ur Kasdim. We know that he came. He had moved with Terah a little bit. There, and there. Then it says, God says, Lech lecha me'aretzecha me'olatetzecha. All the difficulties. Leave your family. Leave your land. Leave your family. Leave your friends, and go to the land I will show you. Of course, that means Israel. Not only that, very first Rashi in the Torah, very famous Rashi. And again, we can spend at least an hour just on that, this Rashi. But if you look very closely, look what Rashi says. Okay, the very beginning of the Torah is Bereishit bara Elokim Hashemayim et haaretz. God created the world. So Rashi asks, Amar Rav Yitzchak. We don't know who this Rav Yitzchak is, but we suspect that it's Rashi's father because his name is Rashi Rav Shimon bar Yitzchak. The Torah should have started with the first mitzvah. The first mitzvah given to the Jewish people as a people was chapter 12 of Exodus. This is the first month that we learned earlier with the Bala. And so he asked, why did the Torah just start with, why do we need a history lesson? That's basically the question. Well, who cares that God creating the world, all the stories of Abraham, etc. The Torah is a book of mitzvot. The word Torah means what? Anybody know?
Instruction.
Correct. That which teaches us. From the word moreh, and interestingly enough, in Hebrew, the word horeh.
Horeh.
Right? Right? In English, the word parent has nothing to do with instruction or teaching. And maybe that's a problem because that's the way the Western world looks. That's not my problem, what teachers deal with it. But a parent is a teacher, whether they like it or not, because they teach by example or non-example. Anyway, the Torah means that which teaches us. If it's that which teaches us, and it's a book of mitzvot, then start in the 12th chapter. That's what Rashi asks. Why do you have to tell us the whole book of Bereishit? Start with the mitzvot. Rashi answers, Umatam patach bereishit, why did you have to start with the creation of the world? Mishum koach ma'asav higid la'amo. It's a pasuk in Tehillim that says God's actions told the story to the people. Latei lehem nachalat goyim, to give to the Jewish people the land of Israel. Then they said the following. That sounds very contemporary. She'im yomru maltal olam Yisrael, if the nations of the world, i.e., let's say all the Muslims, will come to the Jewish people, all the people in the world will come to the Jewish people and say, Listim atem, you are thieves, you came and took Palestine. She'kavashtem artzot shiva goyim, you took Palestine, right? And how can you come and take Palestine? You are... What do they accuse people of taking other lands?
I'm thinking of the state of war, whatever,
in political terms.
They're colonialists,
right, very good. Colonialists, you're trying to take our land, and you're just like everybody else who, Europe tried to take all the other lands, you're the same way, you're just no different, right? This is the first Rashi in the Torah, and Rashi had a lot of chutzpah because he was living in a very Christian country, okay? So what happens Hamon Rim Mahen, the Jews can answer, Kol Ha'aret Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The beginning of the part of the Torah proves that God created the world, and therefore, since it belongs to God, He who bara, He created it. God can give it to whoever He wants. God can take it from the people He wants to and give it to the people He wants to. And since He decided to give it to the Jews, you have no say. Okay? What's the problem with that?
They won't accept.
Sorry?
They won't accept.
You go to any Muslim and say, you can't be here because, our God's in the towers. Go take a hike. That doesn't speak to them. So what is Rashi saying? Rashi's not a fool. Rashi understands that the Torah is not going to convince anybody that non-Jews, that the world, that the land belongs to them. So let's go back to the Pasuk. What was the words of the Pasuk in Tehillim 111? It says, Koach ma'asav higid. Okay, middle line. Middle line, Tehillim Kufir Aleph. Koach ma'asav higid, liv, help me here.
La'amo.
God told his actions, who's la'amo?
His nations.
Not the nations of the world.
His nations.
The purpose of this creation story is not to tell the world, but it's to teach us. Because if the world comes and says it's not yours, you have an answer, right? If you don't believe it, if you Jews don't believe it, of course the world's not going to never accept the fact that it belongs to the Jews. And therefore, many people believe this, but there are many Jews who are not observant who say, you're right, we did come and take, and they have a good argument. If we don't believe that it's our homeland, not from the fact that we lived here, because we lived here, the Indians can take over the United States. We lived here, and people moved in the last 3,000 years many, many times. But if it was given to us by God, and we believe that, then the people who are living in Shomron and believe this are not as crazy as it sounds to the real world. Okay, or not the real world, the unaccepting world. It's ours. You don't want to accept it? Okay, I understand. That's why we need an army. But at least we know that it's ours. We have to be convinced. And therefore, the whole point of the shir, if you will, is that the land is special. The land has almost human feelings. Right? And we'll throw up something. Well, when do we throw up something?
When we're sick.
When we're sick, or when it's going to harm the body. The body knows that it's going to be harmful. Right? The body of Israel knows it's going to be harmful, the land, when something is not right there, right? And God is paying careful attention, says the Torah. And so forth and so forth. And therefore the land has to lie fallow. Why does the land have to lie fallow? Why does the Jew have to lie fallow once a week? I'm not going to say the holy name of Shabbat. But just like the Jew, the person has to lie fallow, whatever that means. Meaning make a change and make a difference and improve. So too the land has to go through one year after every seven, right? And there are many, many other parallels between the land and the future. Okay, now I'm going to teach you something that will make you feel very good. Okay, the Marsha is, before I get to that, one source that I didn't put in there. I didn't put this source on, but this demonstrates how the rabbis, or the rabbis wanted the Jews to feel about the land. This is a Gemara in Bava Batra. I'll read it to you very quickly because you don't have it on you. All right? It says, Amar lahem b'fanai, bo v'yomar lachem shalo l'tabel kol ikar. I yafshar shekvar nigzirat zeirah l'tabel yoter midai. When the land, the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash came, and the Jews had to leave the land of Israel, the rabbis wanted to enact a series of halachot to make sure you never forget the pain of the land, okay? But then they said, and they enacted these things, but the people, it was too much for the Yeshar, this is a very famous principle about the rabbis. She'ein goes, well, we couldn't do it when we wanted to. She'ein goes in Zerah Tzibur, Elam Kemor, Tzibur Yecholim Lamodba. You can't make a ruling, the rabbis, on the people unless the majority of the people are accepted, meaning they are able to accept it. Now look what they say. Etc., etc. But they wanted to say, so few of these we do. At our greatest moments of joy and our greatest moments of pain, right? The rabbis made sure that we would never forget about the land of Israel. Okay? What's the greatest moment of joy?
Marriage. Wedding.
Hopefully,
babies.
Wedding.
Babies.
Right?
Babies.
Babies, okay. Babies, yes, but baby, well, okay. Babies so they get married, right? Anyway, they got marriage. And when is our greatest purchase?
A home.
A home, right? The rabbis make sure that we can't do these two great actions of joy without remembering the sadness of not being having the land or the yard or the other Beit HaMikdash. At a wedding, of course, it's the it used to be the ashes, and whatever they sing, Yemesh Kafet Yerushalayim. And this is the Gemara that has it. It is very common in many homes when you build a home, some people have the custom not, they leave a square empty, right, unpainted. That's what it says here. To remember that we are not complete. We can't be completed without the land of Israel. Okay? And then it goes on to list a whole bunch of about four or five other things. Every meal, you should have one less dish. The people didn't accept that. Every time women put on jewelry, you should put one piece of jewelry less. People didn't accept it. But they went on to think, in order that we should constantly remember the land and the pain of not being in the land. Okay? So that's one source I wanted to bring to your attention. And the next source is a very happy source. Source number 23, the Marsha, I've forgotten his name, but he lived in the 1700s. He said the following. This is based on a Gemara, that there's a whole list of things. When is the Mashiach going to come? And this happens. And they're contradictory, by the way. A generation that is totally observant. A generation that's totally not observant. A generation where the children talk back to their parents, which is every generation. But on this particular one, it says, if you do this and this, Eimacha Kates Megulam, he said, there's no bigger, larger proof that this is the end of the diaspora and the beginning of Messianic times. Look what he says in source 23. Lefi shekolz man she'ein. Now he wrote this 250 years ago. Kolz man she'ein Yisrael admatam. Or any time the Jews are not in their land. Ein haaretz notenet peirutev. No matter who occupies the land of Israel, it will never blossom. Kedarka, the way it should. Avok et shachzor, when the Jews return, litein peirutev, and then the land gives its fruit. Zel keitz migula, shekarov lavavot, that the keitz migula, there's an open proof that the time of the Gula is upon us. Man Gula Shachzuru Yisrael Adonai. It is a fact that no country in the last 2,000 years who tried to live here, no people who tried to live here, were able to make the land bloom. And today, the numbers of exports versus the number of imports when it comes to agriculture is off the charts. Okay? We learned that drip. Irrigation and all kinds of other things that happened, but the Marsha didn't know about that. Marsha said, and by the way, I think this is the greatest thing, the greatest bracha. This is again another shiur, greatest bracha that ever happened to us. What would have happened if, when the British came here and they started to grow, they started to live here, the British, and they found that the land was giving all kinds of great fruits, or they had discovered oil, or that the land was terrific. What would have happened?
They'd never have left.
Never, never, very good. Never in a million years would have left. The only reason they left is this is a godforsaken land. Nothing's ever going to become of it. And therefore, better to leave it than stay here and suffer pain and injuries, etc., etc., to the soldiers. Right? And look what we've done with it in 75 years. So the Marsha had predicted that when we have a land that is functioning, it only happened under the Jews, okay? And that is also at the beginning, 24 is the same as source number 18. The very beginning of Jewish history starts with coming to Israel, and the very end of Jewish history ends with the Jews coming to Israel. When the Mashiach comes, what do we say in Shemoneh Esrei? Let the shofar go out, right? The Sunnis, the Kabbes, Leotainu, all the people from all over the world will come back to the land of Israel. Kapseni Yachad Merabah Kafot Taaretz, and will gather us from all four corners of the world. I'm going to end with, I'm going to end with one thought, something which is pretty obvious. What are we asking God here? We're asking God to help, and it's happened. From all four corners of the world, there are Jews, there are people who are Jews, some who claim they're Jews, etc., coming to the land of Israel, as we know, okay? And just imagine if we didn't have the land of Israel today, the Ukrainian Jews who would want to get out, and all kinds of problems, right? But what do we say? We say, "Kapseinu yachad me'arbah kanfot haaretz." Why do we have to say, "Kapseinu yachad"? Kapseinu means, gather us together. So why do we have to say, gather us together, together? Understand the question?
So
could have said, "Kapseinu me'arbah kanfot haaretz." The answer is that the rabbis understood very well that Jews can gather together physically without feeling yachad, without feeling as one, without feeling caring for each other. So the bracha is a twofold bracha. Bring us together physically, and when we get physically, we should also feel as if we are yachad, we are one. The word yachad comes from the word echad, that we are one. We've achieved the first, the goal is now to achieve the second. And no matter what happens next Tuesday night, Wednesday, is to carry over the feeling that we're all part of this undertaking experiment of 75 years, we're all in this together. And if we can feel that, then Mashiach will really come. Thank you, everybody. Have a Chagat Mulut Sameach.
Thank you. No, not for the next 2 weeks.